This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Massachusetts' highest court has ruled that MIT is not responsible for the suicide in 2009 of a 25-year-old graduate student. MIT does have a higher suicide rate than other schools, but it turns out depression, anxiety, and suicide are a prevalent problem throughout academia. David Ray is a professor of carbon management and education in the School of Geosciences at University of Edinburgh. He's written about his own struggle with depression during graduate school in the journal Nature, and he joins me now via Skype. David, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Hi there.
What prompted you to write about your graduate school experience now, some 20 years later?
I think it was plucking up courage. So at some point, I think after Christmas or earlier this year, it had been 20 years since I really suffered very deep depression. And it's taken me all that time really to pluck up the courage to talk about it. And I think the main prompt was that I talked to some friends. I talked about my own experience of depression, and that helped me a huge amount. The support I got from them was fantastic, and that made me realize that actually we need to talk more about this. You know, it's one of those things that has a stigma associated with it, and a lot of us hide away our depression and mental illness, and that actually harms our healing. So the prompt was talking, I've been talking more ever since, and I'm really pleased about that.
Would you share a little bit of your story and what, in looking back 20 years later or over the years as you have thought about this, what happened? What put you in that place in graduate school?
Yeah, I've thought it's been so hard kind of reliving it. So writing the article for Nature was brutal, to be honest, really hard. But going back over what sent me into deep depression, I think it was a combination of things. I was away from home, like a lot of grad students are. You're in an environment which is new, and that's stressful anyway. You've got all the expectations of the work you've got to do. So new techniques, new ways of working, new pressures, because, you know, at that graduate level, the expectations are higher. And that conspired with me to make a huge mistake. And my huge mistake was to pretend I was okay. So with the work initially, I didn't really understand what I was supposed to do, but everyone else seemed so confident that I didn't feel like I could admit that I didn't understand. And that went into a spiral of me pretending things were okay, but them not being okay, so my experiments going wrong, and that sent me on the slippery slope, really, into depression. So it started off with not talking to my supervisor and the other postdocs and PhD students, and ended up with me in deep depression because I didn't talk to anyone about that either. I was embarrassed and scared, and that put me in a really dangerous place.
Do you feel like maybe your advisors should have been more attentive, more involved, that they should have been watching and seeking you out as opposed to waiting for you to come to them?
I thought about that, and I'm a supervisor for dozens of students and scores of students over the years and staff, and I obviously, because I've been through this, I think it helps because I have empathy and I'm looking out for it more, and I make a point of not just asking how people are going with their research and with their work, but also how they really are, how they're feeling, how things are going in their lives. I think my supervisor, like most academics, they were really busy. They did a fine job. I wouldn't criticize them. I would criticize, I suppose, myself for not talking to anyone, but also at that stage, the university, in terms of its counseling services and people to talk to, it certainly wasn't overt. It wasn't something where there was any mention of mental illness on campus overtly. So it wasn't even an avenue that you came across. You know, if you were in the student union or on campus, it wasn't something where you saw it as an outlet. And that's something where I think our universities have improved massively. Certainly, my own university The students tell me the counselling systems are really, really strong, and there are signs around the campus and emails and on all the kind of open communication that I didn't really have when I was a student. So I don't want to lay the blame on my supervisor, because I think, given the context 20 years ago in the university I was at, he did a good job. I think I should have reached out, but I also think the support systems weren't as good as they are now.
To your point, though, about the importance of talking about this more and how hard it is, multiple studies have shown that it's somewhere between 30 and 40% of graduate students who suffer from depression. This is not a small problem. It's incredibly prevalent. And yet, I can tell you from my own experience in graduate school around the same time that you were in grad school, I think, you know, I struggled, but I would have told you that everyone around me was fine. And yeah. So, you know, how do we start to bridge that gap between how many people are actually struggling and the perception of how many people are struggling?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's something, when this article came out this week, I was hugely nervous about it coming out, because I was still worried about the stigma attached to mental illness and that people would think less of me. And, you know, and I was concerned. And it has been incredible. The number of colleagues, of students, some old colleagues that I knew at university when I was going through this really bleak time for me, they've got in touch after reading the article and said, you know, I had no idea. Me too. They were feeling the same. And it is something where it's kind of this hidden epidemic, actually, in terms of mental illness. It's still one of those things that is there underneath the surface, and I think people are concerned that it'll affect their career opportunities, it'll affect their relationships if they speak out about it. But it does seem to be so prevalent, and one of the things that's really come through over the last few days, just since the article was published about my own depression, is just how amazing people are in terms of their support. You know, a lot of people have experienced this, so they've got empathy. They really welcome it being out there in the open. And actually, the more we talk about it, it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing. The more we talk about it, not only we feel better, but actually we help others talk about it too. If we normalize this like any other illness, then the stigma disappears, and actually people can more easily start addressing their issues. So it's like you say, it's amazingly widespread. The surveys, the research which has been done in academia shows it's very prevalent, and we just need to talk more about it.
Do you feel like you've seen, perhaps in your students over the past two decades, an increase in anxiety or depression? We know that we've seen an increase in the general population, rising levels of anxiety and depression. But despite the fact that we've both now said multiple studies show how prevalent this problem is, it's still a fairly small number of relatively recent studies. We don't necessarily have the hard data to say how much this problem has changed. Just in your experience, do you feel like it's changed?
Yeah, it's really hard anecdotally, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's one of those things. Has it increased in terms of the number of people affected, or just are more people being surveyed and talking out? I think our environment in academia in my time has certainly got more stressful. So for the students, we introduced student loans here in the UK, quite a while back now, so over a decade ago, but they've become a very big financial burden on our students. So they have that hanging over them. And so there's extra stress there. The expectation from our PhDs and our postdocs and our staff is much higher. You know, the metrics they have to meet, our postdocs, their contracts are shorter and shorter, it seems, every year. It used to be a 3-year postdoc was the norm. Now they're down to, you know, 6-month contracts. And so they're constantly having to move house, and the stress of not knowing if they've got a job. So I think the whole system has become more pressured, and with that pressure has come less time for, you know, I think all of us probably to talk to each other and spend time with each other. Things that really help us get through stressful situations, like just sharing our moans with each other, sharing our worries with each other, some of that is at risk of disappearing because we've got all these deadlines to meet. And that's a vicious circle of in terms of our well-being and our mental health. So I do think the external pressures have increased, that must be having an effect on a huge number of people.
I wonder if there are aspects of science, things that are innate to science, perhaps, that also would make scientists more prone. And one thing that jumped out at me from your personal story that really struck a chord with me was this feeling of constant failure. I actually put inside the cover of my PhD thesis a Winston Churchill quote: "Success is going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm," because that felt to me like about the only success I could declare after 6 years of graduate school, that every experiment had failed, but I was still there. And failure is going to be a part of science. And I think societally, we're starting to recognize that there can be benefits to failure. And, you know, we've got these phrases like fail forward, learn from your mistakes. But when it comes down to it, it's just really hard to fail over and over and over. And while we can change our funding systems, I don't know if we can take the failure out of science.
No, that's a great quote. I wish I'd seen that one. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It affected me badly. So I've had, like we all do as scientists, I had loads of experimental failures over my career. I wasn't prepared for it as a PhD student very well. So I felt, you know, everything went wrong, and that hit me badly. And it goes with the territory. And you hit the nail on the head in terms of the pressure to not fail in experiments. So in terms of getting your paper published in Nature or Science or just any journal, you know, publishing failed results should be a valid way forward because that's part of the scientific process. But the reality is it doesn't work like that in most cases. And so there's pressure to make everything work and get a positive result, whatever that might be, from your experiment. And so that does add another pressure. One of the elements I didn't talk about in the article, but it's been looked at more in terms of scientific research, is how what we study can affect our mental well-being. So as a climate scientist, there have been a few studies looking at what we work on and how we tend to have a higher incidence of depression because of our, I guess, feeling of despair sometimes in terms of what we're working on and thinking about the kind of the repercussions of climate change. And I guess that's true for a lot of the things we work on, where we're working on global challenges. The actual subject of our job can be something which is pretty depressing at times. So that's another factor which is certainly emerging as important.
I want to end on perhaps a more positive note. I mean, you got to the point in graduate school where you attempted suicide multiple times, but 20 years later, you are a successful scientist. What saved you? What helped you? And how can we start to make that systematic within science?
So what saved me was people. And it was, I was in an environment where it could have been the end for me. Like you say, I attempted suicide a couple of times. I was as low as I've ever been, obviously. And what saved me was the people around me who didn't know I was depressed because I had this mask of it all being all right. But they just their natural warmth, their innate warmth. There were a couple of people in my lab who had no idea what I was going through inside my head, but who were just warm and had time for me. One of my great friends at the time, he noticed one day when I was really bad. I was really, you know, just on the verge of losing a grip. So even my mask was slipping, you know, the breakdown was gonna happen at work. And I was on that edge. And he was someone who just had the awareness to see that in my behavior, in my eyes, and just spent a bit of time talking to me, just saying, you know, not kind of anything very meaningful other than, you know, are things okay? You know, how are you doing? Do you want to come and play, soccer at the weekend? Just that hand of friendship, it saved me. And people have every day since in terms of my own battle with depression. So the second half, how we make that systematic, that kind of support, is a really difficult one, because I think it's more about setting up the environment where that can take place. So making sure that the working conditions of our students and our staff allow for that interaction, allow for that time, allow for that space, allow all those community spaces and events where, yeah, it can be just a friendly word, a bit of warmth, which, you know, for some of us, in terms of how we approach depression, it can mean all the difference. For others, other systems need to be put in place in terms of counselling, medication. You know, there are a lot of different ways we can be affected in terms of mental illness, and so many different solutions. But one of the key ones in academia, I think, and where we work, is just having that supportive environment, that community, that collegiate feeling, which is, maybe tricky to systematize, but it's absolutely vital for our well-being and actually for the success of our institutions more widely.
Basic human connection and compassion. That's David Ray. He's a professor of carbon management and education in the School of Geosciences at the University of Edinburgh. He's written about his struggle with depression during graduate school in the journal Nature, and he joined us via Skype. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, how science cooperation could be part of our evolving relationships with Iran and North Korea. Stay tuned.